Tradition is somewhat of a slippery word, isn't it? We speak of our family's traditions at Christmas. One family might have Christmas pudding, another has trifle. We can also speak of the traditions of our nation, and here we might mean mateship and a fair go. Of course, we speak of tradition in the church too, but here there's a difference. When we speak of tradition in the church, it is always singular and has an uppercase T. In human living, we know instinctively that there is a hierarchy of tradition. Some traditions are minor and maybe have only a short history. There are major traditions, top-level ones, like tradition in the church, and they have been around for centuries. I mention all this today because in the Gospel reading of today's Holy Mass, our Lord takes issue with the Pharisees and some of the scribes over a tradition concerning food and washing hands and further up the arm too. Some might react to this and say that our Lord is trashing tradition, and they might go even further and say that it doesn't matter what you do, it's what's in your heart that counts. So let's revisit what it is that makes up the church's tradition, with a capital T. Tradition and the Bible comprise what is called the deposit of faith. In other words, what Christ has left to his church to be passed on from one generation to the next. Tradition, in a sense, includes the sacred scriptures, but usually when we speak of tradition, we mean all those truths that have been handed down in various ways, right from the apostles to this day. It includes everything that has been taught by popes, councils, and by those the church has given its approval to, for example, St. Augustine, St. Thomas Aquinas, St. Gregory the Great, and so on. Tradition also includes the practices and customs of the church, including the sacred liturgy. Tradition keeps us Catholic, because to be Catholic means to live and practice the faith in continuity with those who have lived and practiced it before us. You see, the church cannot reinvent itself. We see this in the words and actions of Christ himself. He did not get rid of the Jewish law, because he said in Matthew chapter 5, verse 17, "Do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have come not to abolish, but to fulfill." Jesus himself kept the law in all its embracing detail. He, in fact, was the only one who could keep it perfectly. This is why he could criticize things, like what he does in today's Gospel reading. So what is our Lord complaining about? He is pointing out the overemphasis upon a human tradition, and he is redefining dietary laws so as to reveal, to those who are willing to listen, their true meaning and their true intent. With his own divine authority, and as one who kept the law of Moses perfectly, he teaches that the external concern over cleanliness of food, of cup and plate, and even of the one who is eating, is meant to draw attention to the even greater necessity of a clean heart, a heart free of those 12 evil intentions, which he names, and that we know plague the human heart. Quite evidently, there is also an undercurrent of mischief in what the Pharisees and scribes are up to, as they pose this part question, part blame to Jesus. And so his rebuke of them stings them, especially when he calls them hypocrites. Our Lord is very direct and forthright. But now let's turn our attention to ourselves. As it is put in theological terms, we do not live under the old law, the one of Moses. We live under the new law, the law of the gospel. Because this law has been given to us by Christ, the one who perfectly fulfilled the old law, then the law of the gospel is the fulfillment of the law of Moses. As the Catechism says, the new law releases the moral prescriptions of the old law and enables new demands to arise from them, revealing their entire divine and human truth. What is more, through the sacraments, the life of divine grace is imparted to the soul, so that the interior of the person, the heart, is able to be reformed, renewed, and made able to accomplish that integrity whereby external actions and interior dispositions are in harmony. Of course, this is not magic, and neither does it happen automatically by grace. It requires our cooperation and our effort. So a regular, even daily, examination of our inner dispositions is needed. Questions that we can and should ask ourselves are along these lines. Do I simply do what I want? In other words, am I selfish? Do I interiorly pray the Mass? Or do I simply watch the sacred liturgy? Do I desire to pray more? Do I want to come closer to our Lord? How honest am I with myself? Do I admit my daily sins and make an act of contrition each night? Questions like these are helpful to enable us to probe our heart. Others will notice our external actions and judge them, but my inner self is known totally to God, and mostly to me. May our inner self grow strong, fed with the bread of angels in the Holy Eucharist, so that our external actions may be evidence of the blameless life of the just, who, as we hear in today's psalm, live in the presence of the Lord. Laudetur Jesus Christus.